Tamata Wakatangi Hangi Kuwayo Wo Tamataya Tori Puka Kapikimon.
You're kind of protecting your health in advance. You can put up $200 a year. So it's like food insurance, a food security insurance system. So you'd be guaranteed a priority then as a sale from our group.
Welcome to the Blue Continent Podcast. I'm your host, Brennan Pertzer, International Research Coordinator for the Blue Continent Alliance, the Blue Continent Podcast, and your Blue Continent.
What this program is about, this podcast, what makes it unique is finding people who have knowledge or expertise or have worked to address in a sustainable way a lot of global development issues.
My guest today is Barbados chef and sustainable food advocate John Hunt. John has been engaged in building a sustainable food system for his island of Barbados, and several years ago presented this idea in a TEDx talk from Bridgetown, the capital. How to conceptualize his entire island as a single farm environment and make nutritious food available to everyone. After seeing his talk on YouTube, I definitely had to speak with him.
Morning.
Morning.
I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to me, because I really was impressed with the things you had to say several years ago. And I'd love to hear you kind of restate your vision of today and say, you know, what's happened since that TEDx conference that you did.
From the local perspective, no policy change has been announced. Let's first say that.
Okay.
Not in relation to what I might have said, but I have seen the government is using more young people who would be in the category that might fall into problems in the community.
Okay.
The guys between 18 and 30, who probably have the least of the motivational skills. I've seen the government have given them more like remedial work, but it's work that they can graduate through, which I think is important.
Okay.
Confidence and self-esteem is initial, and then being able to use that self-esteem then to get some training. And I hope, although it's not official policy, but I hope that is the underlying policy, that they give these guys some genuine training in areas that are relative to what the country needs, more so than what looks good on paper. Because we kind of get people doing, everybody wants to be a doctor and a lawyer, but we don't need any more of those right now.
That's true. Now, you're involved with the Slow Food Barbados movement. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's right. Myself and Ian McNeil were the two core founders of the local chapter of Slow Food. Are you familiar with it then?
I'm not, honestly. I mean, I'm familiar with it in some communities in the United States, but I don't know what it's like down there. Can you explain the philosophy of it?
Well, we base the philosophy on the general worldwide philosophy of clean, fair, and good as being the underlying principles of food supplies and management of food supplies from the perspective of the farmers to the consumer. Fair in the sense of a fair price for a fair crop. Good in the sense of best environmental practices. And clean, again, using the things that would be least harmful to the environment.
Right.
And that goes from seed to serving, really. So okay. Far, initially our focus was on finding the chefs who would form an alliance to take food from local growers and organic farmers. And that was going into more of the middle to high-end marketplace.
Mm.
I think the strategy was to really try to find an area that we could raise funds from. So from those fundraising areas, we managed to get school gardens going, where we go into schools, primary schools, and set up small gardens, teach the children how to put these into place, work with the teachers to get programs going with the students. And then our last model of operation has been to provide meals for people who were in a bad position because of COVID. And COVID impacted a lot of single parent families, a lot of young children who would normally get their main meal at school because school was shut for a couple of months. Slow Food jumped in to get the Chef's Alliance to work with the farmers to put together simple soups that were then delivered to the community people. And that's been more or less ongoing. It's changing now because the opening up of the schools has restarted. But that has been the three major initiatives over the couple of years that we've been in operation. But it's that general kind of ethos and working with the organic growers that the Slow Food movement tries to undertake in Barbados. Do they have a chapter where you are? You're in the Bahamas, right?
I'm in U.S. Virgin Islands.
Virgin Islands.
So there's a good chance. I mean, there's a small group of elite chefs here, and I don't know how involved they are with the slow food type movement there. But that seems like you're really an essential point between the growers and the people who need food. That's what it sounds like.
We try to be that. We're trying to operate now as a hub. This is more the organic growers than slow food. We try to collaborate with like-minded organizations. But what we're trying to form is a centralized food system for organic farmers.
Yeah.
We find that we've been trained in education here to be competitive rather than collaborative.
Okay.
So it takes a kind of swinging of people's mindset to get them into that collaboration mode, to get them to realize that working together on our scale makes much more sense than working against each other.
Right.
This is one of the things that we have to find a structure to do that with people feeling safe as they do it. But people don't want to give up their independence. So we find a structure where we can do that and make everybody still feel comfortable is where we're kind of like challenged, let's say.
So that role as being a food hub for Barbados, for your community, is that's where the vision you explained in that TEDx video expanded so that you could feed your people in the best way. Can you, for my audience, lay that out just as concisely as possible?
Okay, well, we registered about 70 organic farmers over the last, we've been around for about 20, 21 years now. Mm-hmm. And over the years, we've registered about 70, 75 organic growers. Everybody's doing their own thing. Everybody's selling in their own markets, developing their own client list. Some people are bringing out sub-products, some people are bringing out teas. What we find is that everybody has a small amount. But when you bring everything together, you have abundance. So over the years, we've tried to start farmers markets with an organic stall. Idea being that the person managing that stall would take from the different organic farmers and have a wider range available on their stalls. So around the island, there's about four major garden farm markets. I think we've been involved with three of them when they were setting up. So that's one way we've been able to use a hub system to try to get people to grow and sell together. It hasn't worked out very well in every sense because some farmers still want to maintain that market space for themselves and their clients. So what we've done over the last 6 months is put together a real OGCA farm hub market in one particular area in the country where we then advertise to all of our growers. They can bring their stuff there, we'll buy it from them. The idea is that we buy the stuff from the growers and then resell with a small markup to cover our costs. And if there is anything put back, then we'll try to add that into a joint account. So the next step in that process is to form a cooperative, a legally registered, constitutionalized cooperative of the organic growers. Everybody then has a share. Now, the idea is that it's not just the farmers that become members of the co-op, but the consumers as well.
Wow.
So that the restaurants can have a share. The average guy on the street can take out a share. So it'd be like a health insurance. You're kind of protecting your health in advance. So you can put up $200 a year. So it's like food insurance, a food security insurance system. So you'd be guaranteed a priority then as a sale from our group. You could come and visit the farms. You could put in your shares in kind. You could put in your shares as labor. So if you come and do 10 hours on a farm, that would be considered, that would have monetary value. So that's the model we want to work to. And we've one of the groups, subgroups of ours, a Rastafarian community, has actually started that program. The government's given them 40 acres of land. They're starting to cultivate it, and they can put in their shares as in kind. So not everybody has the money to buy the best food or to afford quality food, but they have time.
Are you totally pioneering this there, or was there some other place where you got the idea from, or where did it come from?
We've over the years, several people have come here, and I always believe that when you have a goal, you attract like-minded people. People call it a law of attraction. They're like yourself. You're a person, I believe, probably has a similar mindset to myself. And I think you mentioned that. And I think that's a natural attraction that happens anyway. But over the years, people have come to us with different ideas. And kind of reading through the ideas, these things come out. It's nothing that's coming from me, essentially. But I think it's just something that's there in the environment. And some people have shown us we should have a community model of working together, for instance. So when the farmers can, we get together and all of us work on one farm, rather than just be a cooperative on paper. let's cooperate and work together. And we've done that a few times and it works really well. So these ideas that came from, I remember that came from a young lady who lived in California, who was in a cooperative in California. Uh-huh. Said that's how they work in California. We've met other people from Africa who have cooperatives. I said this is the model that works for them.
Okay.
So when you find these things coming around, it's like somebody's telling you, why not try this model? And again, it is about trying it. We've not got it down pat as yet, so it's still something we have to work on.
So tell me, what kind of criticisms have you heard when people say, oh, this will never work because of this reason or that reason? What do they usually say to you?
It's a good thing that you asked that question, because it was more so a major issue in the early days. 21 odd years ago, it was just considered organic farming as a fad. You know, you'll never work. People don't want to work together like you're saying.
Organic farming is a fad? When it's the primary form of like human agriculture for the past, 100,000 years.
But that industrial and agricultural revolution and the education system, I think it turned people's head to think that if it's not new and it's not highly technological, it's not going to work. And unfortunately, there were people in agencies that could assist that we're having that mindset. You know, you guys will never get it to work. You have to farm on a large scale. You have to have this. But we come from a plantation background in the Caribbean. People thinking if you're not doing it on a plantation scale, it's just subsidiary. It's just, you're just going to survive off of it. It'll never become anything. And I can understand what they're saying, but I try to say to them, maybe as an individual, but as a group, I might have 2 acres, you might have 3. 10 of us end up with 300 acres. If we see our lands as one farm, then we have a plantation. We just have to organize our minds in that way so that we don't think of it as an individual, but we see it as a collective. And that's been the bigger challenge when people say, oh, it won't work. And there's other things that people say, like we're too small an island that the drift from the other farmers will corrupt or destroy our crops. So it is true, we are small in size, but organic farming certification allows for you to have a barrier between yourself and any conventional plot. And as long as you adhere to that, it's not about having it perfect, it's doing the best you possibly can.
Right.
I try to explain that to people. We will never be perfect, but we can have acid rain that can fall and drop, Monsanto products on our crops. We can't protect against that. But we wouldn't put anything synthetic into our operations. And that's what we have to guarantee and verify in our records. We can never be 100% perfect,
sure.
But we have to do the very best we can. Say, well, our food, we're not contaminating our food intentionally in any way. So, and I had to convince even people who were doing organic farming about that. Some people were doing organic farming, said, oh, I'm trying it, but we're going to get drift anyway, so what's the point?
Right.
I just said to them, then you get other people who are saying, what's the point in this organic stuff, because you're going to die anyway. Why eat healthy? I try to say, so it's quality of life. You're going to die, but we want to live nicely, we want to live healthily till we get to that point. So there's lots of challenges when you kind of come out on something like that, and because it's kind of not new, but because it's been revamped, and I might not come from a background that has a degree or a master's in it, and I talk about it, people say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, what experience do you have, what qualifications do you have? So it's, for me, I have to be careful how much I say, but I have to also be mindful to do what I can do. So if the proof of the pudding is in the eating, right.
Yeah, you're never going to get, perfect 100%. There's still going to be some cross, the drift, as you say. But if at the end of the day, you're able to feed your people and they're healthy, right? And everybody in the society there is healthy and nobody is dying of hunger or anything like that. And they're all have the nutrition they need, then you won. That's the goal.
Right. And success is an ongoing thing. I don't think there's ever going to be a point where you can say, it's been successful. I think if there's people that come behind and continue it, for me, that's a success. As long as it keeps going, then it's successful. Because it will develop as it's gonna spread, it's gonna have times when it might not spread and it will come back. But as long as that principle is aligned, I think that's success.
The music used in today's episode came from late Barbadian jazz legend Harry Beckett.
And of course, our theme music, The Lone Ranger by Quantum Jump.
Thanks everybody for listening to the Blue Continent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. and we hope you'll subscribe and join us again. Tell others about us. This podcast is also available in a raw video format found on our Blue Continent Alliance Facebook page. If you'd like to see our mini documentaries from around the world, visit the Blue Continent YouTube page today. Thanks again for listening. Take care.